This episode of the Big Wedding Planning Podcast is sponsored by the Sage Bridal Experience, happening on May 5th, 2019 in upstate New York.
Sage isn't a bridal expo. It's your wedding brought to life, the party test run you've always wanted.
Weddings are a damn good time, and planning them should be too. If there's one thing Sharon and Ashley know, it's how to throw a party. Sharon is the owner of the award-winning venue, Gilbertsville Farmhouse. And Ashley is a wedding and good time curator of the celebrated C&A Event Planning. They've teamed up to leave nothing to the imagination.
As we said, it's not your typical bridal show. It's very interactive. You will be greeted by baby goats.
Oh my God.
Chico, the resident beer burrow donkey. Discover awesome. Gilbertsville Farmhouse's glamping village, which is the only way I'll ever camp, and melt into a hammock in the secluded hammock park. We invite any couples who are thinking about having a barn wedding or a rustic wedding to come to Sage and check out all of the hand-picked vendors. These wedding vendors service most of upstate New York. Let's make it a party. Even if you're not engaged or planning a wedding and you're looking for something fun to do on Sunday, Cinco de Mayo, bring a friend, drink a spicy margarita, play with the animals, dance, and have some fun.
And our listeners can save $10 when you use our promo code BIGWEDDING at checkout. So go to sagebridalexperience.com, and at checkout, you're going to use the promo code BIGWEDDING. That's Sage, S-A-G-E, bridalexperience.com, promo code BIGWEDDING, and check out that amazing wedding venue that Sage Wedding Experience is going to be taking place at. That is GilbertsvilleFarmhouse.com. You guys, they have goat yoga, okay? GilbertsvilleFarmhouse.com. Check it out. I want to go.
I know you do. We'll include all of the links on our show notes, and you can follow them on Instagram too. So get out there and have some fun on Cinco de Mayo.
Gracias. The Big Wedding Planning Podcast.
Just two wedding planners tearing it up. Listen. Learn.
Hello, and welcome to the Big Wedding Planning Podcast, the show for anyone involved in planning a wedding. We want you to learn something valuable and be entertained at the same time. My name is not Michelle Martinez. She usually does this intro. It's always a little weird when I'm by myself, but my name is Christy Matthews. I am recording today from my home in Phoenix, and I do have a special guest, so it won't just be me by myself the whole time. And this is a super interesting topic. This guest reached out to us on our email to see if we would be interested in learning more about what she does and how she does it and who it involves out in Pittsburgh, which is also interesting because I don't think we've ever had a guest from Pittsburgh, or I don't know that any of you Pittsburgh listeners have emailed us yet, but you don't always tell us your location. Anyways, I'm going to introduce her, and this whole topic will be about what she is doing when after weddings are over and you have a ton of items, you don't know what to do with them. As a wedding planner, I can attest that a lot of times a ton of stuff gets thrown away. So today's guest is Jody Colella. And she runs a Facebook group called the Pittsburgh Wedding Community. It began in 2012 as a local resale group. You know, those sites where you go and say, like, I have this dresser, I want to get rid of it. Best offer. Anyway, turns out there's a huge demand for wedding items, used wedding items, and lots of people were arranging parking lot meetups, two at a time, you know, woman to woman or couple to couple, to sell and buy wedding goods. So the idea for a Pittsburgh wedding flea market was born, and now Jody has been producing these events for the past few years. The last one had almost 1,500 people attend just to shop. This is a cost saver for buyers and sellers, plus it's recycling and less waste, and we love it. So Jody, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I'm so glad that this worked out, and thank you for reaching out to us. You found out about the podcast from people actually in your Facebook group, right? Somebody mentioned it?
That's right. Yes. I didn't know about it until she kept seeing the same questions that you discuss in your podcast. And she said, these same things are being discussed. And she put a post out and I started listening to one of your podcasts. And I was like, this is perfect.
Okay. So tell us about the community now on this Facebook group. It's not just a little group. There's like more than 20,000 people on it, right?
We are at 28,000. A little over 28,000.
And that's like brides and grooms and not so much industry vendors, but people actually planning their weddings out in the Pittsburgh greater metropolitan area.
There's definitely vendors in the group because there's a lot of brides, grooms asking for recommendations. So definitely vendors saw an opportunity to connect with them. So there's definitely and there's a lot of newlyweds that want to, you know, offer advice too.
Oh, right.
So there's definitely a nice population of different types in there. There's also a lot of moms and parents, bridal mm-hmm. party, bridesmaids.
So people involved, so exactly our audience, people involved with planning a wedding in one way or the other, and the group, all the posts are there. I'm on the group now. So it's a ton of questions. From specific to universal, like I've seen questions like, what do you guys think of this specific DJ, to who used Etsy for their wedding bouquet? You know, can you share your vendor's name? So it's not something that as soon as the bride is married, she takes herself off the group necessarily, because she's still involved if she wants to resell her items or give advice or share her experiences.
That's right. There's some that have been on there pretty much since I started the group, which I love, because they are giving advice. They become almost like mentors to those that are getting married.
Yeah. Because some cities that I've worked in before, certain venues might host something like a, you know, bridal Q&A or retrospective, where there's like a panel of people talking about, best practices or lessons learned. This might be like at a bridal show. But what's so interesting about your Facebook group is that it's 24/7. It is a forum at all times. People are posting on that.
100%.
Yeah. And it sounds like if it started out as a resale site, are there still a lot of people who go there and are looking primarily to buy or sell?
Well, it's interesting. I actually, because there was so much of different elements going on, I decided to actually move the resale into a kind of a subgroup to make it convenient for the discussions to be in one place and the resale to be in one place, which is so ironic because the group started as a resale group. So I moved it, you know, so they were able to scroll through resale if they needed it, and discussions and questions and vendor recommendations if, you know, they were able to do that in one place as well. So it's just ironic because I started the group as a resale page. So I was trying to kind of break up the elements so it was not so, because everybody's, you know, roles or, you know, intentions in the group were different.
Right. It's pretty all over the board right now.
Yes.
By nature that so many people are on it and helping each other. So it seems to me, and I don't know, I don't have much experience with these kinds of groups myself. Michelle and I have talked a lot about how our podcast needs one for all of our listeners to be able to connect with each other. And it just is something that we still need to put the time into and figure out how to facilitate. But what struck me when I was like scrolling through your group is that for every question asked, there's like 25 answers. Like people are really generous with their opinions and their advice and guidance to each other.
100%. And they have no problem giving their opinion either. Sometimes there's no filter. mm-hmm. But there's definitely, but there's a lot of, you know, validity to their answers. Like I never would have thought of that. Comes through my head a lot when I read these answers. And it's great. It's great information.
So tell me how the actual flea market itself, from the first one you did until now, like how it's evolved, and well, first how you started it, like the first one you did, what did you do to make this a success? Because it obviously was, if you've done several now and every one has more and more attendees.
Absolutely. I definitely attribute it to the group. The group has, you know, it's had a viral component to it. It was very grassroots at the beginning. I was literally going to have it in my driveway, but I didn't want a bunch of people in my driveway or on my street. It would have been chaotic, and good thing, because 400 showed up at that one. We had,
because you had no idea what to expect.
Oh, not at all. Right? I put the event on a Facebook event, and it got shared over and over again. We had it in a banquet hall, and I think we had 50 sellers. 400 shopped. I didn't even charge admission. I think I only charged like $10 a table to cover the cost of the rental of the banquet hall.
Kind of a great experiment.
Oh, yes. And it was phenomenal. And then the next one, I think it was $25 a table, something to that effect. And 700 showed up for that one. And I still didn't charge admission. And the crowd control was becoming an issue for every one of them. I was outgrowing each space. They grew and they grew. I continued to market them in the group. I tried to add experiences to them. Like at this point now, I add like a DJ or a photo booth to kind of give that vendor a little bit of a visibility. I bring food trucks on just to give, you know, a little bit of experience, because I noticed that they're coming earlier to wait in line because they want access to those items. I incorporate a VIP now because they want in faster and right. Don't want to wait and fight for those items, so that we give a limited amount of VIP so that they can shop ahead of the general admission, and they they buy those tickets.
So it's somebody that I don't know, you're a quarter of the way through planning, you know, you want 100 chargers in a specific shade of rose gold, and you want to get in there early because at the last one you were at, you saw that a lot of these tables had chargers at them. So some people, yes. are some people coming for like, that's it. I want chargers. That's why I'm here. That's my goal. I don't need anything else. Or do some people shop like I shop at Target, where you go with one thing in mind, and then before you know it, you've picked up $500 worth of stuff.
Right. I've seen all over the place. I've even asked them personally. I've done, you know, even surveys. I asked them. Some are coming to look for ideas. Some are finishing up their finishing touches. Some have an idea in mind. Some are coming to finish, to get their centerpieces. I've seen people come out with boxfuls, armfuls of items, cartfuls. It just depends, you know. I think some people even come to decorate their house. It's crazy. Yeah. What I think they go in with one idea and may come out with something completely different, and they may even change their theme after that. I mean, it's amazing what they're seeing at these tables. People's weddings are at the table, and they're going, "Oh, I never thought of that. That is really great idea."
Putting candles inside of a whatever, you know, right, that kind of container or whatever that they've maybe somebody's repurposed in a way.
Exactly.
The seller has had their wedding. Let's say like a typical case. My wedding was a couple months ago. Now I have a bunch of chargers, a bunch of matching vases, a, you know, card box, a banner that says bride and groom, and a shit ton of fake ivy that I put down the centerpieces. That person has all those items, and they buy one or two tables from you, like 6-foot, 8-foot tables.
Mm-hmm.
And then they set it up trying with the intent to sell. So they make it look good on their table. And then someone that is planning their wedding would come in, pay. What's the ticket price usually?
It's $15 for a general admission. And then they pay a little more if they want to get a VIP
come in
ticket.
Early. Mm-hmm. Okay. And they come in, and that for $15, they walk around, they find me with all my fake ivy and my chargers and my vases.
Right.
And it's cash in hand.
Yes. And some actually go as far as to take, you know, Venmo or PayPal, you know, just to make it even more enticing to the, you know, some people don't always carry cash, but I always try to communicate in the event about it.
Well, I guess somebody that, like, I've never been to a legit flea market, you know, that towns have or communities might have. But I guess if you have shopped at those before, you'd have a better idea of what to expect at this one. But in an ideal world at your flea markets, the seller is going to leave with nothing because they've hopefully sold all their items. Maybe they have a couple $100 in their pocket.
Right.
And the buyer is going to get, let's say, a bunch of fake ivy that was used for one event.
That's
and
right.
isn't damaged or dirty or stained or anything. They're going to get that for probably under 50% off.
They're going to get a fraction of the cost. It's getting reused. And the, you know, the bride or the person that got married, the newlywed, is able to unload that out of her, you know, his or her
garage or
exactly
their guest room.
And who gets money back from their wedding? I mean, it's nice to be able to do that. And it's neat that I see things come back into an event that, you know, or it gets repurposed back into an event. I've seen card boxes get repainted or things added to it. You know, I've asked them how much they've made, and I've seen an average of $300 to $800. I've heard people making $1,500. It all depends how much, you know, they had
bringing in.
Right.
But it's definitely worth the cost of a table, and you're not throwing a bunch of shit away.
Oh my gosh, I know. And if they do have stuff left over, I always try to coach, you know, you're not going to get back what you put, you know, what you paid for it. I mean, that's as soon as you take a car, when you drive a car off a lot, it depreciates. So it's the same thing.
Right.
Even if you bought something at a store and you never used it, it's still not worth, you know, if you can't return
the exact amount you paid for.
Exactly. So you have to go in with the expectation that at least 50%, 40 to 50% is my suggestion. The ones that listen, their stuff's gone in less than an hour. And then they walk out not having to take all that home, and they walk out with a fat wallet. That's what I always say. And they're ecstatic. Their experience is great. The shoppers come out spending $100 on a ton. And I see smiling faces and full arms, and it's still after 4 years, still jaw, you know, my jaw drops every time. It blows my mind. I still
call
it bridal.
You're so sweet, Jody.
I love
it. It's like a labor of love, but you actually still, like, there's no question, like, why you're doing this.
Absolutely.
Anymore, you know? And then there's a chance you might see that same ivy come back a third time, right?
Absolutely. And it may be wrapped around a floral hoop or put around an arch or something. It's just, it's interesting how things are getting repurposed. And I love the ingenuity, the creativity, and I love that it's not getting, you know, ending up in a landfill or, you know, in the garbage or in.
Yeah. By the time it does, it's been more than used.
Right. And when it goes to a Goodwill, I don't know what Goodwill does with it if it doesn't get sold. I have no idea. I probably should research that, but I don't know. And I always recommend a couple of options to them. Like, you can take it to a Goodwill. There's a really great nonprofit here in Pittsburgh called the Center for Creative Reuse, where they can take craft kind of items and they'll take the donations there. It's really great. There's options for it, and I'm actually going to be opening a resale shop where they can also bring it there, and I can try to sell it. And so,
yeah, you know, almost like you'll have a brick and mortar shop yourself soon, in addition to these, that might be, I don't know, sort of a year round wedding,
like an
Goodwill,
option for them,
almost.
Yeah. Sort of, yes, and they can come, you know, in you know, as an option to or an alternative to the event. Hey, just come on in, just sell directly, no consignment, just come on in, sell, And then, you know, you can shop in between. It's kind of a nice option if you don't want to log all your stuff to an event. But, you know, the event's a fun experience. They look at it as a fun thing to do. And so it's a nice alternative.
And I love the idea that it's like bonus money, kind of. Like if you walk out with 500, but you've gotten, you know, you've unloaded or got sold most of your stuff, that $500 is not, we're not saying that's going to buy you your next house, and your wedding might have cost you $20,000, but it's $500 to spend on maybe a couple of those gifts that you didn't get. You know, you still want your KitchenAid blender or whatever. It's like a good date weekend. I mean, it's just something that you wouldn't have had if this stuff was just collecting dust in your garage.
Right. And I see a lot of people in the group not taking their honeymoons right away. Well, now they have spending money for it.
Yes. Yes. And as, like I said at the introduction, as a wedding planner, Michelle and I have both talked a lot about how much crap is, and I say crap lovingly. I know that to all of you planning your wedding, there's a reason why you want what you want, but I've set up and then did a strike at the end of events where I feel like I'm almost moving the couple's entire apartment into the venue and then moving their entire apartment out. Mm-hmm. They want teepees and they want lounge furniture, but they want the lounge furniture that is currently on their patio. And, you know, table numbers, they're just numbers, 1 through 20. Why can't those be used at another wedding? And favors, koozies, all kinds of stuff at the end of the night, fresh flowers. Michelle and I, it breaks our hearts, but we throw away so much floral at the end of a wedding, because if people traveled in, they're not going to take your, you know, centerpieces home with them, even if they're allowed to. So there's just a lot. All of you that are planning your wedding, we've done episodes about how to organize your stuff. We've done episodes about like how to list things out for setup, where it goes, who's in charge of it, does it need to go home with you at the end of the night? So when you're thinking about all of this, you can add now to your conscious wedding planning brain, think about what you can potentially resell or repurpose after the wedding. And if you have that in the back of your mind when you're shopping for items, you might be a little less likely, perhaps, to put your monogram that says your two names on every single thing you have, because you're less likely to sell it afterwards. Which is why I thought this would be a really interesting topic to talk about, because we haven't specifically talked about reselling. We have talked to a bridal shop consignment store for wedding dresses, which I know we mentioned that on our phone call. So let me ask you, because I've rattled off a bunch of items that you might sell. What are the common items that you're seeing sellers bring in to put on their tables?
I see a lot of centerpieces, a lot of signage, a ton of signage.
So centerpieces are faux flowers?
Yes, like handmade center, like silk, or, you know, I've seen a lot of geometric, a lot of rustic.
Containers,
mason jars, yes. But signage is really big right now, and fusion of rustic. It just, there's so many fusions of it. Vintage, gold,
camo. You said, or like,
well, no, that's just so rare. I'm just shocked that I never knew that was a thing until started this group. Yes, I never knew that you could buy a camo dress. There was a woman that in our group that actually, it was really interesting. She made a boutonniere out of, or not a boutonniere. What is that? Maybe that is what it's called. But she used shells for something. I thought that was really, you know, kind of interesting. But
so I personally wouldn't have done that. Might be some homemade stuff people sell.
Right. I mean, I've seen like neat things with comic book pages, and it's just interesting what can be repurposed or elements that are brought into their weddings. But I'm seeing a lot of, you know, I've seen votives, wood slabs, a lot of those. And the first things to go are a lot of the rustic pieces, because it's still very much a popular trend. At least here. I mean, it is.
I think it is especially for DIY, brides where you can collect these items pretty easily.
And there's a lot of DIY in our event. I mean, that's being sold. I think people are buying their items, but they're definitely making a lot and or adding to things that they bought.
Yeah. So you might buy like just a glass cylinder vase at the dollar store, which I've seen them there and I've bought them there, and then wrap a velvet ribbon around them and pin a little, you know, jewel brooch into the middle of the ribbon. And then suddenly what was a simple $1 thing still didn't cost you that much to do, but it's in your wedding colors and it fits your theme. And then at the end of the wedding, you now have 50 velvet wrapped white or plain cylinder vases. So would that seller bring them as is and let the next person kind of dissemble and redo, or would that seller show a picture of what they did and bring the parts? How does it usually
work? Well, I do suggest them bringing pictures of their items in use. Then that person can go, oh, wow, that's
how. Oh, yes.
And then I say, offer a package deal, and then your stuff can go in one shot. And
oh, yeah.
And then
that, does that happen a lot?
It does happen. If it's good for a good price and if the theme is really cool, then it can very well happen. Or they'll take, you know, chunks of things like a center, like something like that. Like say they really like that look of those cylinders. They'll buy all of them. And then they're only stuck with those, little, you know, odds and ends left on their table. And then, you know, they'll just sell them for $1 and then they're done. You know, I was making them 3-hour events, but that last hour was just dragging. So I'm making them 2-hour events because that's all I need. I mean, it's literally, I call it a bridal Black Friday because they are in and out in 2 hours.
Fast and furious.
Yes.
Yeah. Cause I would imagine if you're on the hunt for something pretty specific, like, you know, maybe you go with your mom and you both spread out, like you go this way, you go this way. You know, the only things you're to buy better have emerald green in them. And we need runners, chargers, and goblets. And they just go. And if it's not there, they leave, right? It's $15 off their back.
That's right. And I try to tease them, like, with some teaser pictures during the week of. And when they see the things they want, I don't even tell them exactly where they are. I just tell them where the themes are. And they barrel right for those areas.
Right. I mean, what a cost saver if you know, you're having a 100-person wedding, you know, you're going to have 10 tables. And like you said, you can, if somebody groups their stuff together, like gives a package deal, you could have those 10 tables covered and pretty much ready for fresh flowers and fresh candles if you get lucky and play your cards right at this flea market.
Remember a few years ago when you could go out, have a few drinks, and bounce back the next morning like nothing happened? Those days are over, and you've got big, real responsibilities now, right? Well, we just learned about the way to help you bounce back like the good old days.
That's right. You're a real adult now. So you should have some morning recovery. These little magic drinks, you should have those on hand.
They're magic.
Morning Recovery is the drink for when you drink. And Michelle and I were together in Boston recently, and on the last night we were there, we went out.
We drank.
We had some drinks, and then we got back to the hotel room, and we're starting to pack and like get our shit together because we had flights the next day. And guess what? We were totally fine.
We were totally fine the next morning. So all you have to do, you guys, it's really like magic. Just do your thing, go out and party, have some drinks. Before you go to bed, just pop open that morning recovery drink. It's like, it's a little bigger than a size of I mean, you could drink it in like 3-4 big gulps.
Two big gulps.
You shoot that drink back and it will help your body detox, rehydrate, and bounce back. So you can have fun at night and do more the next day.
Morning Recovery's secret is DHM, a plant-derived superhero ingredient that helps speed up the breakdown of alcohol-induced toxins so you wake up feeling 100% ready to go.
And if you don't love it, you get your money back. So that's cool.
Yep. There's no reason not to try Morning Recovery by Moore Labs. They have a special deal for our listeners and a special landing page website, which we think is so cool.
We love it. Go to morelabs.com/thebigweddingplanningpodcast and you're going to get 20% off your entire order. Say it again.
morelabs.com/thebigweddingplanningpodcast for 20% off your entire order. If you've ever felt like crap the day after drinking, you need Morning Recovery. So get 20% off a 6-pack, 12-pack, or 24-pack at morelabs.com/thebigweddingplanningpodcast.
Thank you, More Labs and Morning Recovery.
So what are some of the super common things that buyers come in there? Like, what are the popular items or anything we haven't mentioned yet?
That sell?
Yeah, that people are like, I'm looking for this and I found it. Done.
That we haven't mentioned. Well, I mean, I think I mentioned a lot of the big stuff.
Do people bring linens in?
Yes, they do bring linens. There are chair covers, but they're a tough sell. I'm trying to think what else.
What about lighting equipment? Does anybody bring their own? Because people buy their own uplights sometimes. You ever see that?
Not seeing a lot of that because a lot of the DJs provide that.
Sure.
So, you know, they... I don't see a lot of that. It's great.
Not a lot of AV equipment.
Right, yeah. But I do see there are couples that have made their own, like, industrial lighting. Those are probably my favorite. My personal favorite are the industrial themes. And, you know, when they make, like, table numbers out of copper piping and...
cement slabs.
Oh, yeah. And then I've seen... Edison bulb, like lights put, you know, incorporated mm-hmm. into centerpieces. Donut walls I've seen a couple of them. And I feel bad though for the people who bring these big items like barn doors and pallet right. signs and they don't sell because right, they've logged them.
Cart them back out.
Yep.
Yeah.
I actually bought one. Well, that's. Because I felt.
You're funny. You're like, I'll take it
from you. But I end up using it. I reused it for, I did a video, promo video, actually the one I sent, and it was great.
Yes, I'll link to that in our show notes, by the way. I'll link to all of your stuff, but I'll have the show notes, and we'll share that promo video on our Facebook page also. So I hadn't thought of that. What you're mentioning now is something that somebody made themselves, the copper table numbers or a big donut wall where they did pegs themselves, and then they bring that in. So what they've paid for is the pieces that they needed to create it. And then they spent time doing it. And a lot of time people enjoy this stuff. Like my father-in-law's he likes to work with wood. Mm-hmm. So he did this for us. Isn't it great? When it's like handmade like that, do those people have a little bit, are they like less likely to sell it for cheap because they have a sort of emotional attachment or like I built this with my bare hands and now you want it for 50 cents a piece? No way.
Exactly. And that's funny you said that because I say that as well. There is an emotional attachment to their items because they made them, or they have this mentality, well, I made it, so I should charge the kind of pricing that an Etsy seller would or an artisan would charge. And they can't go into a resale event with that. An artisan event, yes, but not
like a
resale.
Craft fair.
Exactly.
But the difference is at a craft fair, you'd be expected to have 17 of those because you're trying to sell them. So
right. And
you
can charge more.
Yeah. Think of it as a resale because that's what it is. Don't try to dress up something that is not that.
Right.
So you tell them kind of how to price or you give them like that's too high.
A coach. Yeah. I send them a seller guide. I say, you know, you're going into this. It's not a craft show. It's not... an artisan show, you're walking in, they're coming in for a bargain. They're not coming in to, to shop for, they're coming in for a bargain. So you need to price as such. I'm going to be offering them an artisan show later in the year, but that's not what this is. They're coming in for a bargain. So you have to price as such. If you're wanting to come and get rid of your stuff, then that's what you need to do. You need to price it that way. If you want to hold on to your stuff for a craft show, then do that.
Yeah, that makes sense. So some of the, it goes a little bit beyond like my example of tying ribbon around a vase to like something was made entirely out of, you know, a pallet or whatever mm-hmm. for the purpose of it being a, let's say, donut wall. How much, just off the top of your head, would one of those big bulky pieces go for?
Like the donut 50 wall?
Bucks? Yeah.
Oh boy. If priced correctly.
Or a big sign, welcome.
I've seen donut walls. Some have tried to sell them for over $100. Price wise, it should be under. But if you wanted to buy them like, you know, like at an artisan thing, they'd be worth probably a lot more than that. And they look at that. But so has the mm-hmm. shopper. The shopper is pricing their stuff before they walk in the door. So if they're coming to a resale, they're going to be like, well, no, I'm not paying $200 if I can get it for $100 or $75. So I would say a fair price would probably be for a donut wall, depending on the size, probably about $75. But, you know, I also say it's a flea market, a wedding flea market, so you're going to haggle. There's going to be people that are going to say, hey, will you take it for this? You know, and if the bride wants to, you know, the newlywed wants to get rid of it, then that's up to her, but she, you know, he or she needs to, you know, decide if, is it worth getting rid of for the price?
Mm-hmm. Price accordingly.
Right.
Or be willing to haggle, I guess. Like that haggling kind of stresses me out. I'm the type of person who goes up to a vendor in Chinatown mm-hmm. and I want something and I just want to just give you what you want and leave, not try to do like a, how about 2 for $10 or whatever. But
I know, I'm just saying, what
kind of the nature at flea markets, right? I mean, some of the buyers are going to do that.
I know. And like, I get uncomfortable saying, well, will you do it for this? And I just, I don't like doing that. It's like, it's uncomfortable.
I'll just like give them more. I'll be like, here's 20.
Ugh. I know. Oh, I don't have change. Here you go. You know?
Yeah.
I just, you know, and I understand they've spent a lot, you know, so I hate doing that, but sometimes, you know, I got to get a thicker skin, but you know, it's just, but if they want to get rid of it too, I mean, I'm looking at it from the engaged person's, you know, stance there, but this is a big financial event in their life. They want to spend as least as possible. And, you know, one of my credos is what you save in decor, you put towards quality vendors. So mm-hmm. save as much as you can on your decor because you're only going to use it once.
Yeah. And then hire the photographer for that extra hour mm-hmm. that you wanted to add on to his package, but you didn't know. Sounds like a lot of money, $400. But look, you just, if you are buying stuff with the intention to sell it afterwards, that's a different way of looking at all of the items you're going to buy.
Right.
Which leads me to my next question, which is what are some of the key things to consider that you've learned in this doing these now that are like general rules of thumb or best practices when for the person planning their wedding? With the idea that afterwards, hopefully we'll be able to get rid of at least half this crap for a small profit. And again, I say crap lovingly.
I know. As a person who's going to get married and then to sell it?
Yeah, like I'm right at the beginning of planning and I know I like the color blush and I know I like a lot of greenery, but that's kind of it. I haven't bought anything yet. And I'm not going to a flea market. I'm going to buy all my stuff new. But then I'm going to want to sell it afterwards, or at least sell what I can. Are there any rules of thumb? Like I rattled off, like don't put your monogram on every single thing.
Oh, yeah,
because it'll be less likely to sell it. Or are there any things that you know, any items that like can always be resold?
Oh, I see. The one thing that I see the most, like, I'm actually coaching them not to sell are their wedding dresses. And it could be, I just don't recommend selling a used dress, at least at a resale event, because it's not set up for dresses. It's set up for decor. They are coming to shop for centerpieces, signage. It's a rushed event. They want to say yes to the dress experience. They want to be pampered. They want that champagne. They want to be oogled. And you're not going to get oogled when you're trying to get, when you're getting shoved for a centerpiece. Right. You're not going to have a pretty dressing room. You're going to get pipe and drape and a mirror. You're not getting that. And you're, if you're, and, I mean, I know there's a very successful dress online. And I recommend using those, or if there's dress consignment shops, I know there's really successful ones. Do those. Our events just aren't made for those. And I know that altered dresses are tough. We have had a very small handful sell their dresses, but they all bring them. And of course, there's an emotional attachment to your dress, and they're all overcharging. Sure. No offense, but a lot of them are overcharging. So it's a tough sale. And I don't recommend bringing them. I've thought about not even allowing dresses anymore, but I, you know, by all means, if they sell them for like a very low price, go for it. And I'm not going to, I don't want to ever say you can't sell anything, but go for it. You know, taking good care of anything that you sell. You know, you just got to be careful what you, you know, anything big that you bring, those can be tough because guess what? The person shopping did not expect to come in and buy something big. They may not have a vehicle big enough to carry it. So maybe bring a picture of your large item. If they're interested, make arrangements to pick up that large item. Don't lug that giant donut wall. Don't lug those barn doors with you. Bring a picture of them. Show them in action. And if they're interested, make arrangements to pick that up. Don't bring them with you. Yeah.
So with table numbers and other signage, is it something like a chalkboard or some ornate frame that has something written in it that the idea is you can erase what I wrote or wash this and write your own thing or something over it? Or is it signage that can be like is permanent signage like welcome to the ceremony that can be used for anybody's ceremony?
In my opinion, when I see signage with their names on it, they need to charge low. I've seen their names on it and they're charging the same price as somebody who's selling a beautiful ornate mirror. Yeah. Yes. I've seen, you know, gorgeous ornate gold mirrors for $40. And then I see, for the same price and a very nice chalkboard, nice sign made with wooden
chalkboard.
That
you'd have to do some work.
Exactly.
To clean it up or whatever. Okay, so that's a hint. If you're going to resell the items, if there's anything you can take, any of your own personalization that you can take off, it'll make it a little bit more sellable.
It's more enticing to a buyer to for them to have to do less to it.
Got it. So for those people that, well, actually, before I ask that question, I wanted to ask about flowers. Because you said centerpieces, but I think you're also talking about containers and, I don't know, other things that might go in the center of a table. Do people do stacking logs out there a lot? Like where you have pieces of log and you stack them in the middle and then the centerpiece goes on top of it?
If you mean like the wood slices, that's we call them, yeah. I always call them wood slabs, but I mean, yeah. Like we see a lot of wood slices, you know, yeah, we do see that.
Yeah. Or even the things that look like marble or mirrors, but what would be at the bottom of a stack of things in your centerpiece? But when you talk about flowers, I wanted to ask you about that because I don't see or work with a lot of silk or fake flowers for weddings. Although I have had brides hold a bouquet that is made of brooches or made of that like balsa wood almost, but they can get those wood flowers on Etsy. Yes, yes. It's more of a shell kind of wood, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know what you're talking about. But I've seen those bouquets, but I have not worked with, I have maybe done one or two weddings total that have actual fake flowers involved. What are you seeing out there with fake flowers and how are they being used or repurposed? And are you seeing a lot of greenery?
We're seeing eucalyptus here. We're seeing ivy a little bit. You know, those who like the sunflower look, there's definitely artificial flowers I've seen used as like a runner across a head table. There's been elegant ways to make their bouquets. There's elegant ways to make their centerpieces. I've seen gorgeous artificial peonies. There's, you know, again, I'm blown away by, I think with Pinterest, they have really been able to get really creative and do a lot of these things DIY. I mean, but, you know, and if they had somebody make them professionally, then, you know, they're reselling them after.
There's
I think it goes both ways.
There's two thoughts that occurred to me with fake flowers, because we've had listeners email us before to ask, will having fake flowers save me money? And usually our answer is no, because they cost pretty much the same as fresh flowers. True. But what we didn't take into consideration is that you can't resell your fresh flowers afterwards most of the time. So maybe it does save you a little bit of money because you can sell them for 40% of what you paid or something. But then also it occurs to me that sometimes the argument for fake flowers is I want to keep my bouquet afterwards. Like I want it in my house. So I'm going to do, you know, this, the one on Etsy that's more of the sola or the wood, or I'm going to do this one made out of, the brooch or just like some, I've seen one made out of handkerchiefs that had like vintage handkerchiefs that have been rolled up. So it's obviously not a real bouquet. They're not going for that look, but it has sort of like a old school gypsy kind of look to it. But I always think the reason a couple would opt for that is because they want to keep it afterwards. But this is kind of opening up my eyes to like that the resell option afterwards that would work really well for faux flowers, especially if they're, you know, the kind of quality that they look real, which it sounds like you're seeing that stuff. So that's expensive. I mean, those silk flowers, even to go to Michael's for all the fake sunflowers, you know, they're like $3 a stem sometimes.
Exactly. Exactly. And then, you know, I always say, I mean, I hope that these, the pricing, I mean, think about it. If it's getting resold more than once, I hope the price is going down a little bit. I mean,
every time, but
a little bit. I mean, I mean, it'll end up being free, but you can't go all the way down. But it,
yeah,
it
but
needs
it's still
to
a win-win
that price
for every
point.
Buyer and seller. Even if your ivy has been used at three different weddings, no one knows that when it's at your wedding, and you bought it for a cheap price, and that last third bride that sold it to you got a tiny, you know, kickback for it.
Right.
It really is one of those arrangements. This whole thing feels like an arrangement made that you went into this with. This can be a win-win for everyone if our expectations are appropriate.
Right.
And your part of your job at this point is managing, has always been managing expectations of the buyer, the seller, and of what the experience is, because it's not a wedding market. I mean, it's not a bridal show.
No. No, and I've always tried to maintain it being specifically about the resale. And I've tried to incorporate, you know, little things into it because, you know, I added a little bit more of a vendor feel to it. Like I added a couple of more vendors to it. And it wasn't successful for them because they're not there for that. They're there to buy.
I mean, I just love the idea that this is like 2 hours, bang, bang, and it's done, because it keeps it, like you said, you kept your purpose pretty pure with it being purely wedding stuff, decor, and resell. So the fact that you've been able to, I guess, continue that focus is a testament to how much of a demand there is for these kind of events.
Mm-hmm.
What do, and we'll wrap this up, but what do people do other than throw the stuff away if they can't sell it or don't are not willing to go low enough to sell stuff?
You know, I've seen them leave it behind, and sadly, they'll either leave it behind, and I do recommend taking it at least to a Goodwill, giving them options of where to take it, like educate them where to take it. They may take it back to the group to resell it, just to try to make something on it. And then, you know, I'm offering them that option to later in the year to sell to us. And then maybe they can repurpose it in another way. But hopefully they're not throwing it away. I really hope not. But
so your brick and mortar will be more like a consignment?
No, it will not, because I am concerned about the markup. Just like at the okay. at the resale, if it's costing too much, they're not going to buy it. So right. a consignment would be concerning to me because it would cost too much. I think I'm going to actually have workshops out of it where artisans can come in and teach them how to make signage, how to
yes. kind of
bring that Pinterest to life, and have, there's two floors to my building, and I'm going to have artisans come upstairs, offer classes, and teach them, and then they can sell it after.
That's awesome. Well, Jody, thank you. This has been enlightening. I know there's other cities and regions that might have things like this, but let us know right now where people can find more information about your markets and the Facebook group, and you're planning on expanding. So maybe just to keep in touch for if you ever come to their region.
Well, they can go to our website, Wedding Flea Markets, that's plural.com, and I'll have more information there, and they can come to Facebook for our local group, but we do talk about a lot, and I'll be definitely listening more to your podcast too.
And I hope that people from your group, that vast group out there in Pittsburgh, listens to the podcast. And if y'all are listening right now, shout out to Pittsburgh. You have an amazing wedding community out there, that all these connections you're making with each other, I think, are just really cool. And Michelle and I both, you know, we want to be in on that, but I don't want to have to like pose as a Pittsburgh bride to get, you know, to be able to connect. I just think it's really cool. And I know a lot of cities have this, and the best advice a lot of times is going to come from other brides and grooms and word of mouth. So good for you for facilitating that and kind of meeting that need out there.
Like I want to do wedding TED Talks here. I think they need to be done here. I think there's so much cutthroat here and so much entitlement here. And I just think everybody needs to come down to earth and think about the customer instead of about themselves. And it's never about the customer anymore. It's about themselves.
It's hard because the wedding industry, so many people are making money on weddings, but they're for the people planning their wedding, it's a one-time thing. They're not going to be planning another wedding in 6 months usually, where they can come back and say, you were our caterer last time, can you do it again? So yeah, Michelle and I talk a lot about the wedding industrial complex as it is. And I think you're doing a service out there by staying so transparent and so focused on what,
thank you,
you know, the need is. So good for you. Thank you. You'll be doing the TED talk out there. I like that idea anyway. So if you're listening on iTunes, please rate and review us. That would be awesome. And we're always here to answer your questions. And we're on Instagram at the Big Wedding Planning Podcast, Facebook and Twitter, TBWP Podcast. Our website is thebigweddingplanningpodcast.com. And we have a search engine on the website, so you can search for a topic. And we have show notes after every episode. They're always posted with links and quotes and a basic outline and notes of what we talked about on the episode. If you want to support us monthly, if we're helping you to plan your wedding, or with a one-time contribution, you can do that on Patreon, patreon.com/thebigweddingplanningpodcast. And the last thing I wanted to mention is that Michelle and I are both doing consulting. And just email us at thebigweddingplanningpodcast.com or at gmail.com if you want to set up some one-on-one sessions with us. So that is it. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Jody.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to y'all later. Bye.